setting up shop.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Setting Up Shop, the podcast with the three of us here who hopefully can make your day a little bit brighter, the load on your shoulders for your business a little bit lighter, and generally just offer you some of our experience that can help you think your way around a problem that you may or may not be experiencing. So my name's Dan, I'm a wood turner from the UK, and with me, as always, for my co-hosts, Heidi, a potter from America, and
Hello.
Erasmus, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, so today's episode is all about time to play and having time to play and staying happy as a self-employed person, which sometimes can be harder than others. Hopefully, not so much for all of you guys. And yeah, we're just going to talk through a couple of our own experiences, but also just reminding everyone that it's really important to set aside some time. So we, as always, we go back to that timetable and we go back to that organizational tool that we mentioned way back in episode one of season one, and talk about scheduling some time for yourself to play, to experiment, and to have fun, which can take all sorts of shapes and sizes in the workshop. So, Rasmus, this was your kind of idea for a subject title. And I think this is partly because even when you're working on you know, orders and stock items, your brain really wants to be off doing something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
So you have to regulate your playtime rather than just sort of deviating from what it is you're supposed to be doing at the time. So can you give us an example of what you would do in order to fulfill that need to have play and experimentation in the workshop?
Well, the most important thing is to actually catch myself in wandering off and doing random things. Because if I do all of the fun random things in between the serious stuff, or when I should be doing the serious stuff instead, then suddenly I don't have my playtime. I just have distraction. But usually I try to put time aside sort of in segments around bigger projects or bigger runs of production. So that I have like a couple of weeks of doing one thing and then maybe 2-3 days where just like, okay, now I can catch up on doing the fun things. And sometimes, like last week, that was making shelf brackets and trying to make a couple of new designs that I can, because I need to hang things in the office. So sort of bridging that connection of like, I want more designs of shelf brackets because I've hardly made any before. I sometimes struggle with conceptualizing design for that because it needs to be sturdy. So, okay, playtime. I need this thing. Let me try to have fun making the thing.
Okay, so that's interesting. So an element of your fun, and this is where we all get to admit to being quite nerdy as creative people, is the fact that part of your fun is basically still working in the workshop and still doing the thing that you want to do.
Yeah.
But it's not for a job that you've been commissioned to do or a product line that you're currently working on. So you're in effect doing a bit of product development, but it's enjoyable because it's you are the customer. So you are creating the thing for yourself. So you get to have a bit of fun with it. And it doesn't matter if it's a bit quirky or a bit off or perhaps even irreverent that you might not want to share with someone else, but it looks fine in your personal space.
Yeah, and also considering I do a lot of teaching, I have a lot of people walking through my space. So just having a variety of examples of different things we can make, not necessarily during the classes, but more like the breadth of what you can do with blacksmithing, I think that's also pretty important. And I have very little to show for in that regard. And when it comes to shelf brackets specifically, you can make them super simple, or you can make them really fancy and elaborate, and you can combine a lot of different techniques to hold it together, make it really traditional or more modern or something in between. So in my mind, at least, this is both fulfilling a need, practically in the office. It allows me to play and do things I wanted to do for a while, and it lets me decorate the space, hopefully, with something that doesn't look like utter shit.
See, I just instantly had a quote in my head from the animated film Robots of "See a need, fill a need," and just went from there, really, on my own little spiral. So, but you're absolutely right, Rasmus. So, obviously, like you said, if you've got you know, students coming into the workshop or potentially customers walking through the workshop, there's every chance that they're going to say, what's that? What's over there? I need one of those in my life. That's not what I came to you for. It's something completely different. And I think those of us who are aware of some of our UK-based friends may have listened to a different podcast where one of our other blacksmith friends is talking about how their playtime has been making, similar to what you're saying, but rather than a product necessarily, they've been making organic shapes, but out of metal. And the reason why they've been doing that is partly to test their own skill and to improve that and to enjoy the process, but also to create a kind of physical Pinterest board type idea or representation of these are other things we can do. And then they'll go up on the wall and, you know, customers coming in and you can go, right, well, you're after this. Do you want to have an element of this in it? Do you like this texture? Do you like this shape? You know, what color, whatever, and all of that sort of idea. Because all of us end up with those projects that we've started on but aren't for someone, and they'll end up sort of on a shelf or on a wall somewhere and just out of the way.
I have dreams about that as well, like making more axes, swords, and things like that, and have those at decoration up on the walls in the forge. Because they don't need to be reachable for every day. They just need to look cool up there, right? Not every day, once a week.
What kind of zombie prepper are you if you're going to have your swords and axes way up high and you need a ladder to reach them? Honestly.
I mean, you've seen my workshop. There are
hands. I have seen your workshop.
For head smashing all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's lots of sharp, pointy things at eye height all over the place. Absolutely.
Yeah. Very practical. Very practical.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Heidi, one of the elements I think we discussed in the pre-show was about also, whilst having fun and wanting to enjoy what you're doing, is also in a way not putting a restriction on it, but it's also very helpful if you know that it's going to be relevant to your business as well. And you mentioned specifically about playing with different glazes and all of that kind of thing. Would you like to elaborate on that a bit?
From my perspective, if you can picture my process, right, is when I'm doing commission work, it's mostly batch out of, you know, 20 to 100 of the same piece. And the objective when I take an order like that is to be able to fill the kiln. And if I get a short order or say like a large order, I can only fit in 1.5 kiln loads, then I have a whole half kiln load of extra space for me to like play. And I might take an entire afternoon and just throw all different shapes just to kind of see what my clay is capable of. I have a very groggy clay that has, it's got manganese in it. So it speckles, it gets freckles when it's fired. It's very plastic. So I can really push that clay very far before it starts to tear or fall apart. And so that allows me to try and use different shaping tools. So I've got these really crazy ribs that have wonky shapes that, you know, you press up against the side and it holds that shape. And, you know, just being able to play with those goofy tools that maybe the average person is like, I've never seen that before, so I didn't even know I could ask for it kind of situation. So I've got a bunch of pieces that are just unique to that are just planters. They just really fun looking pots with a hole in the bottom for a planter. And I get to experiment with glazes. So Dan, like you were saying, I typically don't mix my own glazes. I get commercial glazes because I feel like I have more of a consistency using commercial glazes than I would if I mixed myself. I'm a terrible baker. I am a terrible cook. So me following instructions specifically to a weighted powder and mixing it correctly is not my strong suit. I will quickly mess that up every single time. So I typically might look at, say, a manufacturer that I haven't used before, and they've come out with a new cone 6 fired glaze that looks like a cone 10 fired glaze and has crystals. I might get a little tub of that and just try it out. I might try out a new technique like sgraffito. Sgraffito is where you throw something, you let it dry to leather hard, you cover it in black, usually under glaze or slip, and then you carve to the you carve back your textures or your designs so that they show up in the clay body color, and you've got black glaze everywhere else. What's that?
Sort of making a negative.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh.
Fancy.
Yeah. So it's cool, those experiments. And then my favorite thing to do, honestly, is to just experiment with stamps and experiment with rolling pins and textures. And, you know, you don't have to spend 20 hours coming up with one piece. You can experiment and just have like this whole field day of just fun, end up with these resulting pieces that maybe don't glaze right away. Like I have a whole table downstairs for filler where I can try out different glaze applications, or I can try out different stenciling, or, you know, that's down there. So it's kind of like twofold play, where the throwing parts play and then I fire it and I kind of sit it in a bisqueware pile that, you know, even if somebody comes over and they just want to play in clay or, you know, help me glaze, I might give something like that to them to see how good they are at following instruction and trying out glaze. But you know, there's like with clay as a medium, there's so many opportunities for experimentation that it doesn't run dry.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating, isn't it? How each of us sees the term play or staying happy in your thing and experimenting stuff. Because as I mentioned sort of just now, I think anyone who is in this kind of creative space and trying to do it as a business, we are so passionate about what we're doing that when you get told, oh, hey, look, you've got a gap between this order and that order, and the money's there, you don't need to fight for it, you've got the time, that our excitement isn't to then go, oh, excellent, I can now binge watch that TV series that I've been really wanting to. Although that might be the case for some of us, it's more likely that we're going to go, oh, cool, that means I get to spend time doing this other thing in our workshop. Or maybe, as we'll go on to talk about, you know, we'll get to visit other places. We get to visit other workshops, do things that inspire us. You know, I mean, it can be completely random, because I recently, in January, so recent enough, we're in April now, I did a shoe pastry making course that was like 3 hours long, and it was a gift from my wife. It took us quite a while to get hold of an appropriate date, but anyway. And years ago, making profiteroles had been kind of like my pastry nemesis. I went through a period where I was making all different types of pastry, and the interesting thing was that during the course of that training, whilst they were very delicious to eat at the end, it was also really apparent to the tutor, who knew me, I've made things for her in the past, she's got a patisserie local to us, and so I've made her like cake stands and stuff, and she specifically said, like, if I didn't already know the level of what you do and the type of thing that you do, it would be really obvious to me that you are a person who works with their hands at some form of craft. Because, not that I was obsessing about detail, but when she was saying, like, with the piping bag, you hold it this distance away, you do this motion, you do that. And my, you know, it was instant. It was not that I was good at piping, don't take me wrong way, but I did. I maintained, right, so we need this gap. This is the motion that we do. And I just copied that. And then any mistakes made were my own and due to lack of experience. Whereas the two other people on the class watched exactly the same demonstration in the same period of time, and both had sort of much more baking experience than I did, and then ignored everything that they were told and like piped in a completely different way and were just making a horrible mess of it. And that sounds very arrogant and like I'm blowing my own trumpet, and it kind of is. But at the same time, it was a reflection, because in my head, I'm still bad. Do you know what I mean? Like, because there is no one there to tell you, you're doing well, you have improved, you know, you have moved along in your skill set. So the fact that someone from a completely different medium watched me do a thing and then made that comment was something like, oh, okay, maybe things have got better. Because the last time I held a piping bag, which was like 8 years ago, so before I'd started doing any wood turning or anything like that, I would have been the same as the other two people in the group. So I was able to see progress in a completely different medium, because your hand-eye coordination and the way that you work with things had changed, or mine had changed. So I think it's worth looking as well, when we say playtime, that don't restrict yourself to just your own workshop. Maybe go and visit someone else who could be in the same sort of medium. You know, if you're a woodworker, you could go and visit a furniture maker, for instance. Or, you know, all of us have friends in the creative community, And hopefully those of you listening have managed to establish some as well. And maybe just go play. I mean, Heidi, you and I have spoken about how close wood turning and throwing at a wheel. Like, there are so many similarities and shapes and forms and getting your eye in that are stolen from each other type thing, that I would love to have a go at wheel throwing, but I'd also hate to have a go at wheel throwing because I know that I'd very quickly want a wheel and a kiln and be going down that whole, you know, that rabbit burrow. But there's that little part of me that thinks, yeah, but you would probably have a better appreciation for form and you'd probably see something very different that you hadn't seen in the turning before. So there's definitely worth it, even if it's just go visit friends and you don't even have to make anything together, but just sitting in someone else's workshop space and just appreciating and looking at the way they work or the tools and the machinery they've got. I mean, Raz, you've very recently come back from visiting some friends in Germany.
Yeah.
Who have a very different workspace to yours. Would you like to elaborate on that a little bit and something that may or may not have inspired you from that?
Yeah, I recently came home from visiting a tailor friend, and specifically because I need some clothes and I want some really nice clothes that I can dance in. And it looks good and be comfortable and movable and all of that and breathable. So it's like, it's a weird niche of things. And the ones I bought, I weren't really happy with. So it's like, I have a friend that does this. Why don't I use them? So I went down there, saw their workshop, and not only their personal workshop, but also their workplace, and how both the places are so different, but also have so many things in common, despite like it's in the same industry, but it's so vastly different in work environments and how it's laid out and how they work with things. And there's a lot of things just walking through the space and just looking at things and seeing how they move through the space. That's really inspiring and really cool. And one really surprising thing is that they do, at their work, they mostly do like prototyping for new clothing lines, women's wear for the most part, I think only really. But then they're using a whole lot of different fabrics, but all of the fabrics are sewn before dyeing.
Okay.
Because then they have maximum control of the color in the end product. And like, well, it makes perfect sense when you think about it. Also, it's cheaper for them to have dyers in-house, which also was a really magnificent space because there's chemicals all over this place and tiny beakers and all of that fancy things. But just that notion of realizing this, there's a very good reason for them to do this thing in this order of operations. Why is that? And what can I learn from this? Like, it doesn't necessarily change how I do things, but it makes me more conscientious about the order of operations in blacksmithing.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So like, it is kind of obvious that when you're grinding metal after forging it, you create a clean spot where it shines really bright next to black stuff. Sometimes you can use that effect on purpose to make contrast, to make something catch your eye. Or like I did on a birthday gift to a friend of mine years ago, I had a flaw in how it was twisted. I had different strands or like 3 or 4 cords of 6 mil round that I twisted around each other. And just about in the middle, something weird happened and it bulged out. And back then I just polished that thing shiny so it actually stands out and looks more purposeful. And like, no, it's a feature. It's not a bug. But like things like that in metal, you can play with that. You can add on color. But how you do those order operations is kind of fascinating. And it just reminded me of, I haven't done that since that accident way back then. But maybe I can do more of that.
Yeah. I think that's really important as well, is that whole thing of learning from things that have not ended up the way you expected them to be. So they're not a failure or something going wrong. It's just, oh, that's not the way that it should be. We can manipulate that and incorporate it into design or whatever, and that's fine. But how would you either replicate that, or what would that impact would that have on something going forward? I think a lot of people who are creative have an affinity, and apologies for this, Heidi, have an affinity with food and with cooking. but what I mean by that is, even if we aren't necessarily the best baker or the best cook or whatever, there's definitely an intent there of, oh, but what would happen if you mix this and that together, and playing around with texture, flavor, color, and all that kind of thing. But the reason why I'm bringing this up, and hopefully you guys will be able to relate, one of mine and my wife's favorite films is the film Chef with Jon Favreau in it.
Yes.
And a concept of the film is this guy who is kind of, he was a rising star, and he's got this restaurant where he cooks in there, and all the food he makes is really, really good. And there's going to be a critic who comes to see him, who he last saw him and wrote about him a couple of years before. And he's persuaded by the owner of the restaurant to still make the same menu that he's been making, because it's popular with the crowd. So therefore that's what should be championed. And so he puts away the experimental stuff that he had planned to make. And as a consequence, the critic writes, he doesn't give him a terrible review, but he basically says, oh, this guy's like, he's rested on his laurels. He's not gone any further. He's not exciting anymore. And I think that kind of, in some ways, can resonate with some of this, where you can reach a peak where you're getting regular sales. You've got regular customers. Your product is good. It's well made. You've possibly got faster at creating it or making it. But if you don't allow that playtime and that room to experiment, we can stagnate. And quite possibly it can creep in that you can end up starting to almost resent what you're doing, because it feels monotonous and it feels like it's a job now. It's not your passion anymore, it's your job. Mm. And you go, it's only Thursday. You know, whereas when you started, you would have gone like, I don't care what day of the week it is. I'm doing a 12-hour shift right the way through and just carrying on because I love what I'm doing. And it's, you know, it's helping feed my family and I'm able to do this thing. And I'm not beholden to someone in a corporate world and all this kind of stuff. But if it's gone from that and all of a sudden to being, I've got to, you know, if you're struggling to get out of bed in the morning to go and approach your workshop and that kind of joy has been lost, then it might well be worth taking that step back and saying, hey, look, let's just have some playtime.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, go from there. Heidi.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because recently I was just talking with a Potter friend of mine, and they had just got back from, it's called INSEECA. It's a National Ceramics Education Association. It's like the largest commune of potters and ceramicists that gather every year somewhere in the United States. It's never the same place. And unfortunately, I couldn't go this year because work day job was a bit overwhelming at the time. So I didn't make it. But a lot of the theme and feedback that it sounds like a lot of my friend potters that, you know, came back from that were saying was, I got so caught up in the business part of my business that I forgot why I'm doing the business, and yeah, I am going to scale back what I'm doing for my business so that I can get back to my roots of being an artist. Yeah. And I've been very careful about not overloading myself throughout the year. I would say like the only time of year that I feel like really stressed is typically Christmas, right? Like we're just inundated with orders. But throughout the year, I've made it a point for myself to really avoid expanding too quickly. And one of my other Potter colleagues that are out there, I was recently talking to them because they had opened up a shop in their community where they sell their wares. They still do the batch outs. They still offer classes and everything. But one thing that he said to me was, don't do it. Yeah. He was like, I thought this was my goal. I thought that this is just what you do when you have a business. You just expand. But that's the corporate America approach to business, where it's all about like how big of a reach you can have, how many dollars you can bring in, how many famous people have your product,
yeah,
you know, all of those things versus the lifestyle. And yeah, I think part of the fun of being a craftsperson is having the lifestyle versus having the attitude of corporate profitability. And it's something that I've been very careful for myself to make sure that I wasn't going down that route. Like, I've had a lot of people say to me, you should open a storefront. Well, what does a storefront entail? And how much time additional would that take away from the things that I really enjoy about what I'm doing? You should offer classes. Would I enjoy classes? I think I would, but I don't want to overdo it and say like every evening I'm going to offer classes.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll do once a month and do like a pop-up class or something like that. Something that doesn't take away from the joy, that doesn't become arduous, because it's, I enjoy it, but it is not what I enjoy best.
Yeah.
And I just, it's such an interesting theme, right? That keeps coming up over and over and over again. We talk about like, how do we promote ourselves in social media? Well, if I'm so busy trying to set up the shot to capture the moment, am I in the moment or am I just trying to promote some fictional moment that I didn't really have? Because if I crop the frame a certain way, you don't see the chaos around me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like those, I want to be authentic. I want to, the reason I love what I'm approaching to do is because I want the experience and I want the lifestyle. I don't want to make $1 million a year. I know that's not my goal. I don't want to expand to the point where I'm not the center of my work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's very interesting and very powerful, the fact that, you know, you've had several people who have, you know, they've reached what would seem to be the natural goal and they've specifically said, yeah, don't do it. Like, it makes you unhappy. It makes you this. There's a very well-known wood turner in the Southwest, and I know I've mentioned him before, and he's recently left his long-term day job and opened his own shop. So he's got a wood turning space, and then right next to it is the shop space, which his wife is helping run, so he's not having to run between the two all the time. And it is one of several creative spaces in, it's a glorified like cabin shed type thing, but it's next door to a very popular farm shop. So there's a lot of foot traffic that goes past of people who are willing to pay a bit extra to get good quality, which is why they're going there already. So it's a really good demographic there. And I went and visited, and, you know, he's got a load of turn stuff. And then he's come and seen us a few times in my day job, and I've watched his social media, and he's now got like wooden planks with hooks screwed to them for coat hooks and stuff. They look great. Don't get me wrong. They're not like the kind of beginner woodworking project ones, which, you know, look a bit ropey. But I'm sort of looking and going, hang on, you've got nearly 40 years experience of professional wood turning. You are world. This is what you are really good at. And you're making like resin cutting boards, and you're making like all of this other stuff that is available in other places. But as he said to me at the time, he said, yeah, but it's all very well and good having all these customers who walk in, but not everyone wants to buy a wood turn bowl or a figurine or whatever. So you need to, you know, you need to broaden the spectrum of the people that you're aiming towards.
Yeah.
And fortunately for him, he's acknowledged that early, and he's doing that, and he is still enjoying it. You know, so he's able to hit all those things. Whereas for me, if I had opened that space, and, you know, I don't exclusively do wood turned items, but I probably would be really stubborn and really up myself and be like, I'm not doing that. That's beginner stuff. I'm not doing that. And it, like, even if you've got people coming to you and go, do you make this? I want to give you my money to do this. I would probably still be really hesitant unless it was a slow month, because I'd be like, no, but that's the stuff that the other people do, kind of thing. And yeah, again, twice in one episode, I'll acknowledge my arrogance, but it's accepting the fact that you can do a wide variety of things, but you still need to be able to have fun doing it. So that you haven't got yourself in a position where you've created this point in your business where you have to keep the wheel turning in order to pay for it, because you've reached that point where you tell yourself, if I stop and this all crumbles, then I will have failed, and I don't want that. But you're not enjoying anything anymore. Like, the amount of time you're actually putting into creating things you enjoy is gone, because you've either, as mentioned earlier, you're just making the same products because that's what sells, or like you say, Heidi, you know, it's kind of deviated, or the guy I've mentioned just now, it's kind of, you're having to expand the different things, and it can make it quite hard. Yes, Raz?
I would say, though, that if you got into this for the lifestyle and you are suffering because you got away from that lifestyle that you dreamt of, then you have already failed.
Yeah, you could argue that.
Because, like, But at least for me, like it's the same with Heidi, the monetary gain in this is not the motivation. And because if I wanted to be rich, being a blacksmith is a really, really difficult way and stupid way of doing that. But I want a life where I can do this thing that I really, really enjoy and have security and stability. Like that's my goal. If I can do that and still enjoy doing this, then I'm succeeding. That's my definition of that. If that aligns with your definition, excellent. But then if you start to hate what you're doing because you lost touch with why you got into this and you don't want to stop because you're afraid of failing, I would argue you have already failed because you're not doing this for the right, for the motivation that is true to yourself.
So this is where it goes back a little bit to last episode where we were talking about business maintenance, doesn't it? And having that wellness check in yourself and making sure that you are paying attention to what your mind and body are telling you and those around you. I mean, if you've got a partner who is kind of fed up of hearing you say, and, you know, they were telling you, we've had the same conversation several times about whatever it is you're having a go about your own business, then it's probably a good time for you to step back and have a look at things. And, you know, Heidi, you mentioned before about, you know, some people, no one we particularly know, but some people, for them, the fun bit is sitting and doing the bookkeeping of their job. And if you are one of those people, then I applaud you and say that you are a very well-rounded craftsperson who is going to go far in your own little business. Because for the majority of the rest of us, we either, for myself, I just bail and pay an accountant. I'm just like, no, I would rather give that money to someone else than sit there and sift through receipts and look through all of that kind of stuff. And others just suffer. But the reason why I brought that up is because, you know, that's a portion of the business running element that generally people don't enjoy or is seen to be tedious and frustrating, even though it's very necessary. And that's something I can understand people going, it's coming up to year end or whatever. But that's something you can manage throughout the year and make your life easier, even though many of us tend not to, and it all gathers together as a rush at the end of the time. If you can think about the way the rest of your business is running, if you manage it throughout the time rather than waiting for it all to build up and kind of get on top of you, it's always going to be a lot easier. And if you've got those creative friends around you, you can create that network and that community who are able to support one another. Ida, you mentioned before that, you know, you've gone and had coffee with one of our listeners and just talked about whatever. You know, it doesn't have to be about, so what are you creating today? Well, I created this. So what did you, you know, it, you can just have that interaction with a like-minded person. And, you know, I'd imagine that did wonders for you as well, just from that creative spectrum, did it?
For sure. I think any time that you're able to either commiserate, let's face it, like sometimes you just need to complain about your situation. But I think as long as you go into it knowing, like, having trust in that person that you're meeting with and having a rapport with them, you know, you can solve a lot of your business problems by having like that person or that committee review. I joined a small business group that we will meet once a week or once a month or, you know, whatever comes up. Typically it's at least once a month. We have beers, we sit down, we kind of talk through like what our challenges are, what our needs are in our business. You know, are we hot? Are we cold? Are we, you know, up? Are we down? And they're in all different businesses. One's a real estate agent. One's a small business owner, has 20 people underneath her for her business, and she does contract work. And you know, another person just works for one of the Pittsburgh cultural centers. And all of us come to the table with something a little bit different to be able to engage with. And that also gives us an opportunity to network outside of what our skill set is. So say the realtor has a group of realtor friends and she says, oh, Heidi, we need housewarming gifts for our closings. Yeah. Would you be able to make some for us? Or, you know, you made those pieces that the Christmas ornaments that were illustrations of homes. Can you do that for us? Not only is it a nice outlet and a nice opportunity to like enjoy other people, even if you're not a huge extrovert, It's an opportunity to network. It's an opportunity to grow as a person, as a business owner. And it's a really great opportunity for you to self-reflect in a way that maybe isn't journaling. You know, you can actually put into the universe what you did this week or what you did last month, or, you know, have an opportunity to celebrate your goals being met and celebrate, you know, finishing a big project or those kind of things, or even just, you know, humble brag about your next order.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that definitely sounds like a really good thing. And it is interesting as well. Like you mentioned, obviously not everyone's extroverted, and an awful lot of the creative world, neurodivergent or maybe a bit more introverted. And if you are, then first of all, I really celebrate the fact that if you've managed to either make your small business or if you are trying to, then that's going to be extra difficult sometimes for you guys. And being able to ask for help is not always easy. So, you know, I have to applaud you for that. But it's definitely a valuable thing to be able to ask or just share with a group of people who, like you say, aren't necessarily creative or aren't necessarily exactly the same thing. But I love the fact that it's a social element. You meet somewhere, you have a beer. Hey guys, let's just have a chat. You know, our partners are fed up hearing us about whinging about this problem. Can I whinge to you about it? Maybe you can give me a solution. My partner's fed up hearing about me champion the fact that we've got this win this month or whatever. Can I now champion it to you guys as well? And maybe you can shed some light on how we can then capitalize on that. You know, it's all of this kind of stuff that will make the difference between your small business being a stay-at-home small business that kind of ticks along and is a side hustle to becoming potentially an actual full-time business, because you've built up that community and that network. But equally, as we've said, if you don't want it to become a full-time business, don't feel the pressure. Don't feel the societal pressure of, oh no, but this now needs to go somewhere and become this thing and then become that thing. I've mentioned a couple of times, I think earlier this season, that for various different reasons, I'm not doing any markets this year. That doesn't mean I'm not making anything. What it has meant is that I've done a lot less turning, but I recently got approached by a lady in the village who has started her own small business selling cut flowers. And it's not just from her garden. She's like renting a field and she's growing flowers in the field and she's like taking it quite seriously. And she asked if I could just make her like a little stall for outside her house. And the prerequisite was, here is the space. Here's the very small budget. I need to be able to put like X amount of buckets of flowers on this stand so that people see it as they drive past. And that was the limitation of what she said. And for those of you who know me well will realize that meant I went into overdrive and may possibly have over-engineered this thing a little bit. There is no way for the budget that she had that I would be able to make anything and charge my normal shop rate. It would not be possible for what she wanted. But I've chosen to ignore that and just enjoy the experience and enjoy the fact that I'm still working with wood. It's still my medium, but it's something that, other than building the fold down stand for my own markets, I've not done this before. You know, I'm creating a thing that I haven't created before. So I'm doing what our friend Brett would say, build in space. You know, I know the height it needs to be. I know the width and I know the depth. That is it. The rest of it is up to me, and I'm playing around with things and going, oh, I can do this. And actually, I know you wanted it for just this many, but I know you've got more buckets you can put your flowers in. So now I can maximize this vertical space here and we can put this on here. And, you know, I'm enjoying the process and I'm still creating something and it's still bringing a little bit of money into the business. And so it's a complete step out of what I would normally expect to get as a commission. And when I've completed it, I will put up progress pictures and a finished thing into my Bevelwood UK social media. And I will probably then tag a load of the other people that I've normally gone to markets with, because there's potential for one of them going, oh, actually, could you make me a small thing or whatever? Yeah. And that's not because I'm now going to make that into my business, but because I'm enjoying the experience. And through looking at it, I'm having to realize things like, oh, actually, I can't just put the bucket in this space here and have and have it as the height of the bucket, because there's going to be flowers in it. You need to be able to take them out. You need to be able to put water in it. You need to be able to look after the product more. Whereas my stuff tends to be, it's a set height, it's flat, it's round, or it's a board, and they just go on a shelf or on a table. So I'm now having to look from a different perspective at the presentation of a new product, which is then firing off all the sort of cylinders in the creative brain. So it's been quite enjoyable, and I'm looking forward to getting back and carrying on with it. And there have been several jokes between myself and other people about, you know, putting in solar powered card machines and possibly a wind turbine to keep that working in case the solar power drops, because this is England. But I think I probably am going to buy battery powered LED fairy lights and put those in there as kind of an extra thing as well, because I know she's be very much a case of, you've already gone past what I was expecting, please stop over embellishing and just finish it for me. But I can't stop myself. You know, if I had a laser, I would have done a laser etched logo of her thing and put that on the top and all the rest of it.
At this point, you're just over engineering it out of spite.
It's not out of spite at all. It's because I'm enjoying the process, which, you know, as we said earlier, you know, I've done a lot of batch working last year and in the run up to Christmas. And it's not that I didn't enjoy it, but I wasn't having to problem solve. It was a processes that I already knew. It was, I'm going out to the workshop, I'm making these things this evening. And I wasn't then coming back and talking passionately about it for the next 4 hours. And I think that was the difference. So yeah,
it's a really funny tale, because Ben is the same way. I'll ask him to make the most simple thing. I'll just be like, two boards this way. It doesn't need anything. You don't have to miter anything. You don't, like, you can use pocket hole screws. You can use screws. I don't care. Yeah. It just has to hold bass. And then he makes me this gorgeous record style holder for my bats.
Yeah, with Japanese joinery.
Oh, it's got Japanese. it's walnut and cherry, and it's exquisite, but it's covered in mud now.
Well, no, it got patina.
Yes. Yeah.
What I love, though, is that I genuinely started the project thinking, right, this is going to be simple, because at one point I was thinking, okay, you know, you have to do mortise and tenon and all the rest of it. I thought, that's ridiculous. That's going to take far too long. It's over the top and unnecessary. I am just going to screw bits of 4x2 or 2x4, depending which country you're in. I'm going to screw bits of those together. It's got a slanty roof. It's going to be clad with bits from an old shed that I've got in the back garden, and it still will be. But somewhere along the way, you just start to kind of go, yeah, but if I did this bit, that would be really cool. Oh, and if I then added, I've now doubled the capacity. And if I did this thing here, that's a bit shaky there. I'm going to have to put some angled braces in here to really, like, strengthen that up. And you just can't help it. You can't help it with the best will in the world. And you're having fun. So you're just like, you know what? It's cool. It's fine.
Yeah, that's exactly what Ben says. It's like, it's not worth doing if I'm not enjoying it.
There is that parable. I think it's a parable or a fable. The straw that broke the camel's back. I was like, just one more.
Yeah. I mean, in wood turning, that's the last cut you take on the inside of the bowl, because you just want to take that final little bit off, and that's where everything goes wrong.
And you have a funnel instead of a bowl.
Potentially, or it comes off, or something slips, or all the wood explodes, or whatever it's going to do. Yeah, no, absolutely. So there's a final thing on this having fun that I an angle that I want to briefly cover, and that is talking about, because it's easy for us to say, just schedule in a fun afternoon. Allowing yourself to do it and not feel guilty as a creative person and as a potential small business owner can be one of the hardest things.
Please tell me I've found a solution.
Yeah, salt water. Bad joke ahoy. So I haven't found a complete solution, but what I have found, and I need to find this person again. So there is a person I saw on TikTok who is a fused glass maker, and she is delightfully passionate about what she is doing. And she decided, I think it was over COVID or something, that she started to make this stuff. So her TikTok name I'm going to get wrong, is Trejane, Trejane, T-R-E-J-A-Y-N-E. Okay. And she's really good at sharing all of her processes and everything else. But one of the things she did was she realized that what she needs to do is develop her skills. She's new to this process. She's got to a point where she's making things, she's selling them, they're doing well, but she needs to develop her skills. So she has hand drawn out for herself a skill tree as if it was a computer game or D&D game or something else. And she's gone, right, okay, so here is the project. What are the steps in the process to get there? And it might be, so from a woodturner's perspective, oh, I want to make a lidded box. That's the thing. But she doesn't just go, oh, well done, you've made a lidded box. She's like, right, you've made five of them and they've all worked. Okay, so there is like, you've set the bar of, this is the project. These are the steps in the project that you need to learn to develop your skills. Here is your achievement level of, you've managed to make five of those things. And then at the end of that, she has put rewards. So once you have achieved that thing, you then get that reward. And that reward could well be, now you get a day doing whatever, half a day doing something, or go and meet another maker, go to the beach and just enjoy yourself at the beach. Whatever the reward you want it to be, or it could be a new tool, possibly. New tool for the workshop that you can get excited about, which all of us do. But it is, I think, a really good way of establishing you have definitely graduated through this thing. You have achieved something and you are able to now reward yourself with something. And that's for me personally. Other people might hate that as an idea. Other people might not like that amount of structure in it. But I know the way that my brain works. And so if I can say, yeah, but it's all right because I've done the thing. I've done this other bit, therefore I'm allowed to have this thing. That for me would work really well. And I'm sure there's a whole load of psychoanalysis someone could do on me on that basis. But I like the way you're both nodding.
You're being supportive, Dan. You're being supportive.
Oh, okay. Absolutely, yeah. So I don't know about you guys, but for me, I find that as I've got the clarity then of when can I have the playtime? When can I have the reward? Oh, it's when I've done this thing. So you don't have to build a whole skill tree. You could just set it out as a series of tasks. Not a list, but a series of tasks that is clearly defined. So that's going a little bit back to sort of the goal setting and other things we discussed in earlier episodes. But I don't know about you guys, but does that sound too restrictive or does it sound clearer? Or,
I mean, I like it because I like video games.
Exactly. We're gamifying our personal development is what we're doing. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it sounds like a cliche to me, but also I really like the idea. I think it has a good merit. And I really want to make something like that I can hand out to students now.
Yes.
Where I say, like, you're taking the first step. Here's a rough roadmap.
Yeah.
Plus minus, please come take more classes with me.
Yes. And see, that's the other follow-on from that, as you mentioned, Raz, is being able to pass that not just pass the knowledge on, but pass on the process of the knowledge along. But you can, again, as we went back to how to make the fun relevant to your business. Well, if you are a teacher, you can then say, well, hey, look, this is the roadmap that I currently follow. You know, here are the steps, here are the ladders, and I teach classes in these things. Just saying. Here are the available dates. Here's 10% off your next class for attending this one, by the way, possibly, if you book on the same day.
That's actually a stupid thing I have forgotten to do. To actually send out an email to old students and say, like, 10% off if you take a new class.
There you go. There you go.
I should do that.
Yeah.
Damn it, you're too smart, Dan. You're too smart.
No, I'm not. I'm really not smart at all. I just... You know, we're sharing ideas and we're having that communal thing.
Love it.
Yeah, it's great. If you could reciprocate at some point to give me ideas, Raz, that would be appreciated. You know, just
saying. You're asking for a lot.
Well, guys, I think we've covered this subject from a number of different angles. And if anyone else has got things that they want to share when they listen to this episode, then please feel free to slide into the Setting Up Shop DMs and comment on them there, or pop us an email, info@settingupshop.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P-P-E. And before we wrap this up, I will ask, as I always do, guys. So first of all, Heidi, what's the one thing you've done to further your business since we last spoke?
Well, I've got an event coming up next weekend, not this coming weekend, but the following, where it's the third year that I'll participate. It's called Bark and Brunch. And so this year I'm actually making products specifically for the event. Really? It's product that I don't feel like wouldn't be sellable outside of the event. Like, it doesn't have the event specific information on it. It's just a bunch of dog mugs. Yeah. So it's, I had ordered a bunch of different designs of cookie cutters online. It was just like all of these different breeds of dogs and some cats, because I know some people like those beasts.
the people who like them or the animal?
I don't know. But the cat illustrations are a lot more playful. Like, there's a cat in a box, there's a cat playing with yarn, and the dogs are just kind of standing there like, I'm a dog. And, yeah. But I made a batch of them already. I threw a few more the last 2 days, so they'll be ready for next weekend. And I finished my order for Mini Cooper, and I'll be delivering that when I go to get my car inspected.
That's practical.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Double usage.
Yeah, saving on that fuel.
Yeah.
And what about you, Rasmus?
So I have actually played. I, for the first time, tried to use the gas torch to weld.
Oh,
and specifically to weld leaves on stems for roses.
Cool. Okay.
I had a customer reach out before Easter saying they wanted something like that. And I was like, excellent. I have no pictures or reference materials because I haven't done this yet. But I have ideas. And let me just make up a prototype. And finally, I did. They didn't like it, but I'm really happy. So I finally had the motivation to prioritize to do the thing. And because of the fence job with me setting a lot of rivets, I had to buy an oxyacetylene torch. So now I can actually do at least small scale welding of iron, because in the gas forge, that can be really finicky at times.
Nice.
So
you had to justify buying a new tool for a process that you were going to do anyway. And that means you've now got to play around with doing something different.
And it opens up a whole new aspect of things I can do in the shop, because
fantastic.
This thing gives me a small concentrated heat outside of a massive box on fire.
Does this mean that you can now repair some of those post vices that you've got stashed at your friend's place and get rid of them through selling?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. All right. We won't go there. We won't go there.
He also gave me a new post vice. I stored a pallet of post vice. I think there's five or no, it's more than five. I think it's 10 in there now, because I only have one in the shop, and then we bought one then, and then he had another friend of his say like, oh, don't you have a buddy who does some forgery things? And he's like, yeah, maybe, like, I have these parts of leg vices. And he's like, yes, just chuck it on the pallet there. He'll pick it eventually.
Just add it on the pallet. Add it to the pile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the torch gives me ability to play with a lot of other things I've been meaning to do for ages. And I need to put that on the calendar at some point so I can actually do it.
I would possibly also suggest, Rasmus, and you'll hate me for this one as well, that when you've finished playing around with it a little bit, that you add this all as content to another chapter in the book that you haven't finished yet.
Fuck. yes.
Just a thought, you know. Yeah. While it's going to take you a while to finish that anyway. So for myself, what have I done to further the business? And to be honest with you, there's not a huge amount at the moment, other than playing around with this stand for someone else, which has kind of fired off the neurons a little bit. There is the treasure trade. So, and for any of our listeners who don't know, all three of us are part of a Facebook group that listen to another podcast, which we shall remain nameless. And each year for the last few years, they've organized kind of a treasure trade, almost like I've forgotten the terminology for it at Christmas, where you do swap of presents, but you only have to make one.
Secret Santa,
thank you. But we shifted it so that it starts at April Fool's Day, so that those of us who are creative near Christmas haven't got an extra pressure of trying to make something near that time. And the person that I've got, who I know, which is always a good start, I got really, really excited about actually being artistic and making some form of wall art for them at one point, until I remembered that the restrictions are everything's got to fit inside a standard size shoebox. So that wasn't going to work.
A lot of them have broken that rule.
They have, but equally the person is not in my country. And so therefore right. they would have to be able to travel with it. The thing that I was originally looking at making was probably 2 foot in diameter. So I didn't really feel it was fair that would happen. So instead of which, it's meant that I've come upon a different concept of a smaller variant of a product I already make, which hopefully will turn out quite cute and they'll like it. And if they don't like it, well, tough, because that's what they're getting. But it's that age old thing of, you know, making because something you go, oh, hang on a minute, there's an angle here I hadn't considered before. So there's a little bit of product development and we'll see how it goes for this gift for this person. And they may then become another thing that I add to the website and make as a separate idea. Or they may not. It might just be a nice little concept piece to play around with. So anyway, I have to be cryptic on that because, you know, this is going to be released before the person gets it, hopefully.
Yeah.
And we'll wait and see. Okay. So if you don't already follow us, then we would appreciate a follow on the Setting Up Shop Instagram. So that's setting_up_shop, I believe, or it might not be. We might have changed that. I better just double check that when I'm saying it.
That's right.
It is right. Good. Lovely. And we are currently at, for those of you who are listening in real time, we're currently at only 167 followers on there, which is fair enough because we're averaging at this point in time in the 19th of April, 2024, sorry, breaking the third wall there, fourth wall, that we are averaging about 110 plus listens to each episode. So it'd be really cool if we could drive that up. So please share this with friends you think might be interested. Draw people's attention to it, even if they aren't necessarily directly creative, just small business-based type thing. That could be really handy, might be really interesting. And yeah, so follow us on there. Send us any information you like on the email address previously mentioned. If you want to reach any of us individually, we will vet you and see whether or not we wish to respond, which is only fair when strangers contact you. But equally, we will be nice. And, you know, we're happy to consider things. We're happy to have a conversation about various different things. If you want to speak to me specifically, my Instagram is at bevelwooduk, B-E-V-E-L, wood, UK. If you want to speak to Heidi at all, or just give us all a follow at these different things, Heidi is at Whitehall Pottery at pretty much everywhere because she's really good at marketing herself and knowing how to keep things consistent. And Rasmus is at
loensmed.no
for the website, but just for the Instagram, it's Loen, L-O-E-N.
No, Rasmus Loen.
Rasmus Loen. Well, I'll get it right at some point. It's just Swedish. I keep getting tripped over all of the stuff. I can't help it. The Norwegians are screaming at me at the moment.
All five of us.
All five of you. Yeah, it's a good demographic. Okay, guys. Well, hopefully you've enjoyed it. Share it with your friends. Let us know if you have enjoyed it. Give us some feedback. It'll be gratefully received. And speak to you again soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.